Aaron Zimmel from Ghost Adventures, and you're listening to Parax Radio.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Good evening, everybody. It is 6 p.m. on Monday night, which means you are listening to the Odyssey Files on Para-X. I am your host, Michael O'Neill. With me tonight, as always, is my co-host, Dave Sawyering. How are you this Monday?
I'm doing good, considering it was a long runaround weekend, and we've had a lot of like really fun weather rolling through. And but good. It's a good Monday. No complaints.
Well, you beat me after what was waiting for me this morning at work. I thought this day was going to be awful. But come noon, it kind of crested and turned out to be pretty good. So one of the reasons for that is after 2 weeks of being on the edge of my seat, wondering if she was going to make it tonight, we have our guest, Amy Deaver, who is the site manager for the LeDuc Mansion in Hastings, Minnesota, here in the Twin Cities, we are going to talk tonight with her about the LeDuc Mansion, who Dave and I have both investigated there. We're going to play some EVPs for you that we caught there.
Technology. That's why it took me so long, Mike.
No, I understand. I understand. It's a good thing to be scared of. But our big topic for tonight, which she knows a lot about, is Victorian spiritualism. So Dave and I are pretty big amateurs when it comes to that topic.
Yes, we are.
So it should be an interesting interview. We are going to learn some stuff.
We are going to learn some stuff today. Absolutely.
Amy, let me just start out by asking you, when did you come to the LeDuc House? As the site manager.
Yeah, 4 years ago, and 4 years ago in May. So yeah.
Nice. Happy anniversary.
Yeah, and yes, and I've had the opportunity of hosting many people at the site that talk to different people. Our guests are some of them. Sunday morning, I'll never forget, I did a tour one Sunday morning. I was there all by myself, and a gentleman, as we passed by the attic, said hello to a person at the top of the stairs. And that was the beginning where I realized, okay, there's other people out there that have conversations with people there.
Yeah, something's going on here.
Yeah.
There are. I mean, to be honest, I had driven by the LeDuc Mansion many, 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 many times, because you're right on the main drag there. And, you know, my first instinct every single time was that place is haunted. But I never knew that for sure until Emma, who was a member of my team at that point in time, when we first investigated, brought this to me, and she's like, oh, we can go to the LeDuc House and investigate. And I'm like, I don't know where that is. And then she showed me the pictures. I'm like, I know that place. But,
it's a classic Gothic revival house, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It is.
I mean, beautiful. Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah. Frankenstein, Dracula, they were all, all written during that period. So it only makes sense that people think we're haunted. And yeah. But I always like to think that it's the good people that hang around.
It is. I
run into anything malevolent.
Absolutely not. In fact, if I have like new investigators and rookies and whatnot, I'm actually happy if I'm able to take them to LeDuc because I know nothing is there to scare them. Nothing is going to attack them. That there's nothing but the family there pretty much. Out of all the evidence that I've gotten from that place, not one single thing has ever been negative.
No, every once in a while I get somebody who runs into supposedly the brother-in-law, son-in-law, that was an alcoholic, suspected alcoholic. We're not absolutely sure. And apparently he's not always that nice to people. But just,
I guess it depends on the questions you ask.
Like, you know, I mean, yeah.
So he's just a little crabby. He's not mean. He's just a little crabby.
Yeah.
I
don't have a problem with grumpy alcoholics, you know. We had an employee that was a grumpy alcoholic, you know. They're okay.
I remember at the last time, the Haunted Harvest that you had last October, one of your employees told me that I intimidated William, William LeDuc, and that was why he wasn't like gonna, he didn't talk to me the first time that we were there. And I didn't understand that. I kind of felt bad, actually.
Yeah. Well, we've definitely, one of my first employees was very sensitive to the spirits there. Not so much currently. Nobody's talking to them at the moment. But we've had a lot of different people. And they've run into people in the carriage barn, too. And supposedly those were non-family members, but they kind of helped them along. So you're right. My understanding is that the only people that hang at the site are the family members. So, and maybe Carol Simmons, you know, who's borderline family. Yeah.
Yes, right. He was. Well, I mean, before we get into him, the one question I think we should start with is, why don't you tell us who, like, you know, William LeDuc, the mastermind behind the LeDuc Mansion. Why don't you kind of give us a brief overview of who he was?
Yeah, William LeDuc came from Ohio originally, turned up in Minnesota around 1850, had the first book and stationery store in St. Paul, was a great fisherman, ended up coming down to Hastings originally for that, but got connected to the site, bought a quarter of the Hastings land, and ended up deciding to build a huge Gothic Revival mansion in town right around the start of the Civil War. Headed off to war and became, was a quartermaster. Ended up, finished the war as a brevet brigadier general. And the family moved home just about the end of the Civil War, about 1866, early 1866. They settled back into the house. And lived out the family's life there. They lived there 75 years. Great family man. However, sort of an entrepreneur. Traveled all over the United States, trying many, many different things. Very little financial success. And Mary died while he was actually in California. He was researching vineyards, thinking that, just like Alexis Bailey, would be a great place to start, a vineyard. And Mary died early 1900, about 1904. And in 1906, he became fascinated with spiritualism and reconnecting with Mary. And that's when he actually wrote a book about spiritualism. So it was sort of the tail end of the Victorian spiritual thing. But
so the comment that came to mind, but with the vineyard, I guess I don't really understand why he didn't feel that he was financially, or he didn't get any like financial profit off of it. I mean, wine and alcohol, I don't think can get any bigger. I mean, he would probably be a billionaire right about now. His entire family, all of his ancestors would never have to work a day in their lives.
Yeah, but I think he was like, I think he was 84 when he went to California. Mm. And so by that time, you know, not a lot of energy left. But, he tried, he had apple orchards on the property. He had a coal mine. He had a lumber mill. He had a ferry company. He tried a lot of different things. He had a railroad company that he actually sold to James J. Hill. So, yeah, he's tried a lot of different things. But unfortunately for William, never the first guy there, never really quite stuck with it long enough to succeed.
I was going to say, a lot of those ideas right around that time frame, the late 1800s, those were all booming ideas. Lumber mill, ferry business. I mean, that to me, railroad, that sounds like that would have been any one of those would have been a gold mine.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Flour mill. He even owned
flour mill. Yeah.
And a flour mill.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was always kind of looking for the next, you know, next great thing.
Yep. So he had ADHD, we're saying. He would get bored.
The first person to say that. And yeah. I always defend him and say, no, he's the true Renaissance man.
Okay.
Exploring things, learning, you know, bits and pieces.
Sure.
I like that word better because it's more of who I am. I don't like to think of myself as ADHD.
No, that's I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean, you know, he runs and does something, and then when he feels like he's accomplished it, then he's bored with it very easily, and then it sounds like he moves on, you know. So
that's me to a T as well. So I'm with Amy on this one. I don't like ADHD.
let's call him Renaissance.
Let's stricken that term from this radio broadcast.
Mary Lou Duke was always frustrated with him because she loved Washington, D.C. when he was Commissioner of Agriculture. She thought that was just great. They moved to Washington. She spent her entire life disappointed that they couldn't be back in Washington. You know,
did they ever consider moving back, or was William just, this is our home?
No, Mary actually had some family money and they bought a house. After he finished as Commissioner of Agriculture, she actually bought a house in Washington, D.C. and was pushing William, go get another job in Washington. We want to go back. After a couple years, they were like, okay, fine, sell the house. William's not going back. Mm. William had already done Washington as far as he was concerned. He was on to, you know, on to bigger things.
Right.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. So,
fascinating, man.
Getting back into the paranormal side of the LeDuc, how many people do you think you host each, let's just say, year that like to come in and investigate?
I'd probably say, three or four every year.
Just three or four?
Yeah.
That's not including us twice?
Yeah. We always love to see you, Mike.
I did not pay her to say that. I just want to make that clear to everybody listening.
As far as we know. Yeah.
That was a genuine compliment.
Yep.
It's one of those things that it's sort of a, we have a lot of people that come on tours and link in with William and Alice specifically, but formally we don't have a lot of investigations.
Wow, that's actually really surprising, considering
they're not evil enough, you know.
Let's keep it that way.
Well, Eric, and you don't want those guys there anyway.
No,
because if they're looking for that, if you're looking for the people who are looking for that scare me kind of thrill thing, you don't want them in there anyway, because they're going to stir things up and make that place uncomfortable, and that's what it should be. Yeah,
we had a medium. I don't think she came with you. Did you ever have a medium come to the site, Mike?
Emma had ability. She was intuitive, but that was about it. Like, she wasn't a full, she never considered herself a full-fledged, I see William in front of me, you know, and he's saying this, that she was never like that.
Yeah. We had one that came, and she was interesting because she wouldn't come with the rest of them. She showed up about an hour after I walked everybody through the house, and she didn't want any preconceptions. And she kept coming up to me and saying, William is saying this, Alice is saying this, you know, I sense that Mary always had issues with her gut, and Mary doesn't stay here, Mary's gone. And yeah, she had, you know, she was very into, but it was pretty much Alice and William that she sensed.
What were some of the things that he and William and Alice were saying?
Oh,
if you can remember.
Well, I remember William apparently reflected on the fact that Mary wasn't around anymore. And he was, I think he was kind of sad about that. And you really do. You look at their life here, you know, 75 years they live in the house. William's traveling all over the nation, exploring different enterprises, and he leaves Mary behind. And I'm sure in William's mind, he kind of hopes that Mary was happy. And here, even after life, she's abandoned the place. Other homes, you know? So he was disappointed in that. Alice always loved the house. And
maybe
and
she's that back was in Washington.
What's that?
I said maybe she's back in Washington, D.C. in the house that she had bought.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, maybe that's where she really wanted to be. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe she traveled back there and would rather be there.
Yeah.
Maybe she's free flowing. She's in the White House scaring the crap out of Trump.
There you go. That'd be okay.
Okay, I expected a bigger laugh out of you, Dave. But that's fine.
That. Nope.
Tough crowd tonight.
Tough crowd.
That's fine. I'm okay with that. Kind of lost my train of thought here. Our producer for tonight, I'm not doing it this evening because my program took a big crap on me last night. So we are going to play a couple of EVPs that we have captured during our investigation. Just three of them, not to make the whole show about EVPs. But the first one came from investigation, the very first one that Dave was on with me, from what they call the old kitchen. They have since put on, you know, like a brand new, you know, state-of-the-art modern kitchen. So this old kitchen, which you, Amy, told me during our very first walkthrough,
yeah,
that a lot of people get EVPs from this room. And I put a static recorder in there, and I don't know why, but we did not get back the entire night. Like, we did no investigating in that room whatsoever. And so almost
a lot of people say it gets cold in there.
No, well, I mean, I the last two investigations that I've been, we obviously did. I never experienced like the cold spot sensation there, like at all. But so this one, and it's funny because the best EVPs that we got out of that old kitchen, we weren't even doing the investigation yet. They came during setup while people were walking through and like talking and stuff like that. So this first one that we're going to play, Eric, it's kitchen one, came while we were doing setup. So you're going to hear people walking around and you're kind of talking in the background. But a little girl starts singing. And I thought when I first listened to it that it was this little girl singing. Then there's actually a male that goes shh, and like kind of shushes her, and then another female voice takes over. Like I thought it was just two females singing the same song. Come to find out, Emma, who I just mentioned previously of having intuitive abilities, she kind of got the Little Einsteins song in her head. And she actually started to sing it. So the second voice that comes in is actually hers. But but listen to the two songs and how closely they like compare to each other.
Thank you. Thank you. Perfect. Thank you.
Perfect. So, yeah, I don't know what song the little girl is singing. I don't even think I can make out the words. Amy, did you hear that? I know that I've played that EVP for you before.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't recognize the song.
Yeah,
It's odd that there's basically two voices singing a similar song. And I've heard when you played it for me, it was a little bit clearer than this.
Yep.
But
very much so. Eric, work on
that. So if you explained it, so what you told me is basically Emma had been thinking about the song at the time that that little girl was singing it.
Yes.
Or the other way around. Somehow there was some kind of link.
Well, that's true. I never even thought of it that way. But yeah, while we were doing setup, she told me, you know, during the review when she was like, yeah, that second voice is me. And she explained that story. She pretty much said that while we were doing setup, all of a sudden, like, this melody in the song got stuck in her head. And it turned into like the little Einstein, which I had never heard before. So, of course, it's not going to sound any remotely familiar to me. She got that childhood or that children's show song stuck in her head, and it almost sounds exactly the same kind of melody.
Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of uncanny.
So,
but yeah.
So we have that little girl's voice. Now, listen to, we don't need to play it. This is, you know, there's no real like mind-blowing thing to it, but the little girl's voice in itself, remember that one for this next EVP, which is Old Kitchen one. Different investigation, second investigation, obviously same kitchen. I had just gotten back from picking up goodies for everyone across the street at the gas station. And so you're going to hear myself and Jody. I'm kind of handing her everything that I had bought for her and like explaining what it was. So you're going to hear her say, thank you. No, that's perfect. Thank you. And then she kind of, you know, she, after the last one, she turns around and walks away. And then about, I don't know, 3 seconds later, again, this little girl's voice comes in and almost wants to say thank you to me as well. So listen to that one.
Thank you.
I do love it. I don't know why. For some reason, it just makes me smile every time I hear it. It just sounds so cute. And I never say that word.
It kind of sounds like me.
You think that's you?
I think it has that, like, my tone and my pitch, I think, yeah.
If you ever thanked me for anything, I might have gotten that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. We got to get something to compare it to. So, yeah, I'll have to put that on my list of things to do.
I'm just not sure.
Give me an audio file of you saying thank you, and we'll put them next to each other. I'm sure.
There we go.
It's interesting because there's a lot of people. In fact, an interesting woman who's attached to the site is, I don't know, she's borderline homeless. She says that the Leduc is the only place that she feels safe. Her name is Wanda. She's this dear, dear woman. And I find her at the site all the time. She hides behind pillars. I'll find her in the apple orchard, different places. She comes to the apple orchard concerts in the yard. But one day I found her out in the on a picnic table at the back of the property. And I walked up to her. I said, "Hi, Wanda, what you doing?" And this is like overlooking the woods. So there's really the apple orchards that we've planted are on the other side of the property. And she goes, "Oh, I'm listening to the children playing in the apple orchard." She goes, "I just love hearing their voice." And I was like, "Okay." So, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about children being associated to the site and that they hear these joyful little voices. So it's kind of cool.
That is very cool. Yeah.
I think their very first investigation there, I think we caught a couple of them. It does sound like there's a little boy's voice that we've caught up in the children's room. But it was very, very low. It would never transfer over the radio waves. It's really funny that you, well, I shouldn't say funny, but I mean, it's really interesting that you say that it's the only place that she feels safe, because both, I'd almost say every time that I've been there, you know, during the recording and whatnot, and just the basic, you know, can you make a noise? Can you do this? Can you do that? Like, it's really been really, really quiet. But we turn on that spirit box, and it's like a community You know, we just can't get people to be quiet. And it's all kinds of voices. And I've said this more than once on different investigations there. It almost feels like with all of these voices, like the Leduc has kind of become a like an afterlife sanctuary, you know, for spirits. And so when you said this, the only place that she feels safe, that kind of came to mind that, you know, maybe like it's not just for the living.
Hanging out with a crowd that loves the house.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, we got all kinds of names. It's female voices, male voices. This last time that we were there, and I can't wait to play it for you because it is just awesome. We were in the dining room during a spirit box session, and this little girl's voice comes through. She goes, "Hi." And we're like, "Hello." And then, like, there's two or three things. She's like, "Hi." And then I'm like, "Well, can you give me your name?" And then there's nothing. And then later, probably 10 minutes later, same room, whatever, she does it again. She's like, "Hi." And I'm laughing because this is hilarious. Because we never hear anything that loud, that clear come through the spirit box. And so we're all like, "Hey." And then she's like, "Hey." And then again, we don't get any more communication. But, I mean, it's awesome every time that we turn on that spirit box because we just can't get them to be quiet. But on normal recorders, on, you know, like using our equipment and whatnot, it's like they're completely uninterested. But if they can have that one-on-one through that box, you can't get them to shut up.
You know, I feel that way at the site. You know, it's kind of funny when you think about the fact that the house has been around for 150 years. We still have people that are constantly walking in the door and wanting to tell you their story. And you want to say, okay, so the people that are alive right now, you're only talking about the last 80 years. But ultimately, people love that site. And so you want to say, yeah, they're still hanging out there. They still want to talk about it. It's kind of a weird place.
It is. I mean,
in a good way.
and then I'm going to play, we have one more EVP, and then we're going to go to commercial. But this came from the basement on the Ghost Ark. No need to explain what the Ghost Ark is. It's just a device. We'll just put it that way. But Dave and I were down there. This is during our very first investigation. You're actually going to, I don't know if it'll transfer over very well because we're way away from this recorder. You can hear us mumbling in the background as we're doing our session. Now, I just kind of put this Ghost Ark on top of the water heater. That's right by like the door that goes into where like the security system and everything is. And it's just,
we were down by, was that the old like fireplace room back there? You know, there was like a fireplace way back in the corner. We were way back in that corner.
Almost like an old kitchen hearth.
Yeah exactly. Yes. That's where we were. Yeah. Way down the hall there. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So we were in there and this recorder was on, the water heater or one of them maybe. But clear as day, this voice that clear is not us no. comes in. So basement 3. Perfect. So if you didn't get that, I don't know exactly what this individual is talking about, but you know, he pretty much clearly says they're not down here.
Yeah.
So they're not talking about you and I, Dave.
Nope, they weren't. No, I think he's talking to, you know, in reference to the fact that we were looking for to communicate, looking to speak to whoever might be in that room. And I think he clearly knew that because early, and I'm not sure if it was before we caught that EVP or it was after, but I was sitting like by the stood there for a couple seconds and, you know, maybe two or three seconds. And then it just kind of slowly slipped back out. So I don't know if it came in and saw what we were doing and then went back out and said, they're not in here, you know, letting us know that we were looking in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Or if maybe he said beforehand and then came in to take a peek and kind of see what we were doing. But it was interesting. We didn't catch that on film or anything, but that was just a personal experience. But it happened at the same time that EVP came in. So
yeah, that was the shadow that you saw by
that
me,
was the
right?
Shadow that I saw right behind you. Yep.
Yeah. The only reason why I say that is the first half of your story, you kind of blanked out, almost like we lost reception.
No kidding.
And so we didn't hear the first part. No, I mean, not your fault. We didn't get to hear that first part. So I was just trying to make sure that exactly what we were talking about.
Yep. Yep. There was the shadow that walked in the room and was kind of standing behind you. So
I didn't see the shadow.
Well, yeah. Sorry. I didn't get to see it.
We're not the only ones though, are we, Amy? I mean, it hasn't that shadow been seen downstairs quite a few times?
People have definitely, you know, not been comfortable downstairs.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I've heard that.
There's some male presence downstairs. Yeah. But yeah, people really do bump into it all the time. I think you met Dave Youngren, didn't you, Mike?
I think so.
But Mike, Dave saw William LeDuc up in the dining room. So, you know, people are bumping into people all the time.
You know? Okay. I agree. Yeah. So getting right after break, we're going to get into kind of William's passion later in life, obviously after his wife passed away. So we'll be right back after this commercial break. You're listening to the Odyssey Files on Para X.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Source for everything paranormal, Para X.
And we're back. That's one of the problems with having somebody else producing your show. You got to guess. And so I drugged out that and for a long time before he cleared me. So I was running out of breath.
All 7 seconds of it. Yep.
Well, I'm a big guy. Don't have a high lung capacity.
No.
Actually, I really do. That's okay. So, this kind of fits into the Victorian spiritualism, but William, in the dining room, very, very often, wasn't it? He used to conduct his own seances.
Yeah. He went out to Washington, Tacoma, Washington. He spent a lot of time doing, was sort of initiated, if you will, into the whole planchette thing and seances, and had documented all of his conversations out there. You know, he was old when he started doing this. Mary had just died, you know, she died in 1904. 1906, he writes the book, you know, so... he wasn't really long for this world at that point. He died in, 1912, 1914? So he wasn't, it was at the tail end of his life. So he's bemoaning the loss of his wife, and he starts researching spiritualism. And so ultimately, he's at the end of the whole Victorian spiritualism movement, which is why, in a way, his book didn't succeed. You know, by the time William... And I love William dearly. He's a Scotch drinker. I'm a Scotch drinker. But poor William was very rarely in sync with the right moment of time to be in the hot new item, you know? And so Victorian spiritualism was the same thing, you know? You know, when he wrote his book, it was at the tail end of it. But he had very lengthy conversations. And apparently he was very... at the seances that he was at, he was considered kind of the main character, if you will. Everybody was talking to William.
All the spirits or all the people that were, like, living at the
seances? All the spirits. They were very interested. Now, admittedly, this was written by William LeDuc. And,
right.
And I do. I'm very fond of William, but William was a little self-centered.
I was going to say, so William was fond of William? Is that what we're saying?
William, yes.
Yeah, William was fond of William. Well, that's fine. That's okay. Right?
No wonder him and I get along so well.
All of his old war cronies were talking to him. And so, and bringing other people in to talk to him. So it's almost like he had an audience. There was a number of generals there. Hayes was there, and I believe Sherman showed up. Darwin, he had conversations. Darwin spoke at length about different worlds that he had visited and shared with, you know.
And we're talking Charles Darwin, correct?
We're talking Charles Darwin, yes. Yeah.
So, I wonder how spiritualism fits into his survival of the fittest and theory of evolution.
Yeah, Darwinism. Well,
yeah, let me tell you, he found some pretty interesting worlds out there. But I will say, if you read William LeDuc's book, it's pretty sound. You know, he talks about levels of gravity on these different worlds that Darwin explored and how it affected the species that existed on those worlds.
Are we talking about different worlds like, Neptune and Saturn, or are we talking about different planes?
No, we're talking about, like, out in the universe. One of the planets that he goes, Darwin goes at length about is off near the planet Vegas. And then he leaves William for a while, and he says, I'm going on a trip. I'll be back in, I'll be back in a couple months. You know, be sure to be here, and I'll finish my story. And unfortunately, at that point, William LeDuc decides to head home. Apparently, Darwin was a little offended that William didn't stay around and sent a message to William's friends that,
Okay, wait. So Darwin can go to all of these different planets and he can come back, voluntarily, mm-hmm. or of his own free will, and he can give all this information. But he can only go as far as Tacoma, Washington. He can't come to Hastings and talk to the guy.
Yeah, just thinking the same thing. I'm like, why did he have to be at Tacoma?
Did William get the planchette out and try to reconnect with Darwin? But yes, there was a medium that William worked with out there that was a little more proficient, if you will, with the technology than William was. And so, William wasn't in the right room at the right time.
Gotcha. Now, he talked to all of these war buddies and generals and Darwin of all people.
Yeah.
Did he ever get to talk to Mary?
He never mentions it in his book. And that's the really intriguing thing, is that was ultimately his inspiration, is to connect with his wife. And you know, so it's not to say that he didn't, but he doesn't mention it in his book.
I was just going to ask that if you, in your opinion, think that maybe he did get that communication with her, but it's one of those, this is between us, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, I think that in my mind, I think that's very likely. You know, it's kind of funny because, you know, Mary LeDuc was, I think people are very, very harsh when they come to the site and they hear about William and they listen to the words of William and they listen to the words of Mary. Sometimes they're very harsh they're very hard on both of them. And you want to say they were the classic pioneer family, you know, but William was traveling all over the nation trying to find a way to make ends meet. And Mary was sitting there in Minnesota, which she hated being, as she always says, you know, as we always quote, blue and cold. But ultimately, you want to say they stuck to it. You know, they raised four children. And when you read their letters, throughout their lives, they loved each other. And I like to think that, yeah, that ultimately he probably did connect with her.
Nice.
I wish we could have heard some of that. You know, he wrote her during the Civil War. He took an old ballad and wrote... wrote words for Mary. He wrote a love song to Mary. And so you want to say, yeah, he was always pretty tight with her. So.
I love the fact that he's always pretty tight with her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, throw the site manager out the window for a minute. But yeah, they got along really well. Yeah.
So, Victorian spiritualism, you know, how exactly did it start?
Well, you know, as most people know, the Foxes and up in upstate New York, and really William was late on the scene. I mean, we're talking 1850, 1848 was when the whole thing burgeoned and started. And William comes on the scene in 1906. So he's really past prime. You know, he's way in classic William fashion, you know, not there at the hot moment to really be a big part of the big motion. But yeah, you know, and to this day, it's one of those things that we're uncomfortable with. We do candlelit tours at the site, and we talk about Victorian spiritualism because William died in the house on October 30th, and it's interesting working with our volunteers. Some people are saying, well, we should get a Ouija board out and have a bunch of little kids, you know, a bunch of little girls playing with it, and I just go. You know, in fact, my daughters have been volunteers at the site, and they've said, why don't your girls sit around the Ouija board? And I'm like, no, we're just not doing that, you know?
No.
And I think to this day, right, we oftentimes when we do the candlelit tours in the parlor, we will put a little sign and talk about the whole planchette, which is something that William used in his seances. And it's one of those things that we still have this really uncomfortable, like, don't be careful what you play with.
Be careful what doors you open.
It's like, you know, that Ouija board world is just, it's one thing when somebody decides to talk to you, and it's another thing when you help. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, Michael, but isn't that ultimately sort of that discomfort?
A little bit. Do you think the spiritualism movement is still going as strong as it was in the Victorian, and it just has a new name, or do you think it just kind of died out, and now because of Hollywood movies and paranormal TV shows, now it's kind of come back as, you know, paranormal investigation?
Yeah, well, you know, the sad thing is I feel like what you're doing is really trying to talk to these people. Unfortunately, some of the paranormal shows that are out there really feature the violence, the evil, And you want to say, you know, it doesn't have to be like that, right? You look at theology throughout the years, and in William, it's kind of funny, in William's book, the whole first half of his book is all about saying from day one, you look at man's history, and all the religions have said there's life after death. There's a physical and there's a spiritual component. You talk about people walking to the light. You know, it's like, why do we somehow feel like paranormal activity is something like, oh, you know, there's certain people that just go weird. Why, you know, why are we going there? And yet you want to say, and yet that's those same people are the people that are saying, oh, I wanted to be there when they died, because at that last moment, I knew that they could talk to me after they died. I knew that they could connect with me. And you want to say, yeah, you do. And so all the religions say that. And so it's weird that we draw this line between, you know, what we see on TV and what we experience in real life. Right? I mean, so I think that, you know, I think we're a little bit in denial right now. You know, we've embraced science, and I think we're afraid to accept the fact that the line between life and spirit is, you know, a little more nebulous than we'd like to admit.
we're heavily weighted on the science side right now. I would totally agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the scales are tipped definitely more towards the science aspect of it than it is the spiritual side of it.
Yeah. You know? But you know, I think that the cool thing is that by using science, right, using the technology that you're using in your investigations, you can kind of, in a way, you're almost sort of stripping it away and saying, well, are you sure? Because, okay, I got to read this. I got to read this last page of Williams, because this is a fascinating page. It says, now in this day of x-rays, wireless telegraphy, radium discovery, and aerial investigation, it ought to be possible with the aid of the spirits to establish some better line of communication than planchette between the seen and unseen, between mortals and immortals. And you want to say, yeah, aren't we ultimately kind of getting to that point now where you sort of say, okay, maybe technology is exactly what we need. Maybe the science is exactly what we need to sort of say.
Yeah, that was actually one of the questions I was just about to ask you.
Oh.
You answered it. I didn't even realize to say it, but I mean, I was just going to say, do you think science has its role to play in reaching or getting through that curtain, as they call it?
Yeah, you know, it's really funny. You know, we are supported at the Leduc. We have computers, obviously, and it is just uncanny how often we have weird technological problems. And when I call the help desk, these are IT people. I call the help desk, and they constantly are telling me, "Well, it's the ghosts of the Leduc. it's your ghosts. They're the ones who are messed." And I kind of go, Why not?
Have you ever, like, out loud been like, you know, William, Alice, if you're here, that's great. If you don't know how to use this, please don't touch it.
You know, it's really not a bad idea, is it?
No, probably not. Establish boundaries. Please don't touch all the keys while I'm typing. Yeah.
Yes. Well, and it's all electrical energy, right?
Right.
Okay.
That is true.
Okay. And I kind of go, even we as living people have electrical currents. My husband, I used to be an IT director. My husband says to me all the time, he goes, I don't know what it is about you. He says, but you can break computers. And he goes, I don't know what you do. He says, but you do something that I can't explain it, but it's you. And you want to say, okay, so it happens. And so why do we so often say, yeah, well, this is all logical. This is all can be explained. You know, A plus B equals C.
We don't say that. We don't say that.
No.
That's the science side of the doubting Thomases that say, you know, yeah, all of that can be explained away. That's just the wind. That's this, that's that. But people that are really really in tune with what we do, obviously. They know that there's a lot more to it than that. That yeah. has absolutely no explanation.
Well, you know, when I first had an opportunity, Michael, you invited me into the parlor to do the spirit box. And it was really funny because, you know, I was a little cynical and I was like, okay, I'm just going to sit in the back of the room because I'm really not comfortable with this. And then as they started talking, I was so creeped out. I wanted to get up and kind of go, okay, I want to sit up here with everybody else. because as much as you can sit there and say, this could be shortwave radio, blah, 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 blah. No, not when they're answering questions that are being asked at that moment in time.
Yeah. I mean, one of the questions I asked is, do you mind if we come back again? Right out of the box. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so so I do. I think technology is going to play a big role in sort of saying, you know, it's always a good idea to keep your mind open, you know?
So we have a little less than 5 minutes, about 5 minutes. Amy, I have one more question.
Sure.
And I actually asked this, I have one more recorder to go over with that investigation, which I'm going to be doing this week. And it has this question that I actually asked William, and I'll ask you too. You know, if he spent all of this time trying to breach the gap and trying to get back together, trying to reconnect with Mary, and now he is on the other side, why do you think he's still there? Like, what do you think holds him or keeps him there?
You know, you almost have to say there's something unfinished, isn't there?
It's a number one reason for spirit staying behind.
But you know, or otherwise you want to say, you know, if indeed that curtain isn't final, right? It's not like if you can actually breach the curtain, then why wouldn't you go back to some place that you loved? And you know, William did over and over made it quite clear that Hastings was, you know, he loved Minnesota. He fought for Minnesota as a territory from the day he came. You know, he went to the New York Exposition and brought a buffalo, for goodness sake, you know, to try to support Minnesota becoming a state. And you sort of say, well, yeah, I think, why wouldn't we go back? It's sort of like going home, right?
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, he was gone when Mary died.
Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, there could definitely be a little bit of guilt going on there. And guilt is a very, very large reason why entities stick around. You know, unfinished business, guilt. You know, maybe he felt bad that he wasn't home when Mary was there. And so maybe he's there kind of waiting for the opportunity for Mary to want to come back to the house with him. And maybe that'll happen. Maybe they'll connect again and maybe they'll both move on.
Yeah.
You know. I was just thinking, Dave, that maybe you were right. That maybe Mary is in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, well, that's what I, you know, maybe she is, and maybe he's there, and maybe they're, you know, having a tiff in the, you know, on the other side. And he's like, well, honey, come on home. And she's like, well, I don't think so. I really wanted to be in D.C. Now I am. And, you know, so they haven't worked it out yet.
I think we need to call Mary home.
Well, yeah.
We'll have to find a nice time of year though, because I really don't think she liked Minnesota winters. You know, and I get that. You know,
Fall time when the apples are on the trees in the fall. I mean, that's a beautiful time to be right on the river town. I mean, that's a gorgeous time.
Oh yeah. It wasn't so bad. It's gotten better since Mary left. She should come back.
Or we can just stick around. Maybe wait 10 more years until there are no more Minnesota winters. And then, she'll be perfectly happy.
There you go.
So, Amy, why don't you tell people kind of where they can find information on the LeDuc Mansion on tours if they're ever in the area or from the Twin Cities area and haven't gotten a chance to tour the house.
Yeah, well, we're just due south of the cities on the river, Highway 61. Go to dakotahistory.org and you can find all of our events. But yeah, in the fall, we do candlelit tours and we talk about William dying in the house and Victorian spiritualism. But it's always lovely. lovely site, and yep. we do a lot of different events at the place. But
And speaking of events coming up in November 3rd right now is the tentative date. Yes. But we are going to have they're going to host us. Odyssey Paranormal Society. We're going to do a presentation of all of our evidence and videos and all the stuff. And then probably about 10 VIP people are going to get to join us that night on an investigation of the house. Yeah. So obviously,
I believe there'll be tea and scones included, you know, because it's what we do, you know.
Yeah. Right. So come for the tea and scones, stay for the ghosts.
Yeah. There you go.
There's your tagline right there.
Yep.
So obviously, I'll be putting that type of information once that becomes firm and confirmed. I'll have that up on our website, up on our Facebook page, which obviously, if you want to reach Dave and I, it's Odyssey Files Radio, I think. I'm pretty sure. I say it's so few. If you want to, you know, just check out my Facebook page for the team, Odyssey Paranormal Society, or odysseyparanormalsociety.com. You know, you can get all of that information. You can see all the evidence and the pictures and everything for the Leduc, which we have up on our website. So I think we're about out of time. Is that correct, Mr. B? All right, we're wrapping it up.
Well, thanks for letting me come on.
Absolutely. Thank you, Amy. Yep. I really appreciate you know, you making the time tonight. Eric, yep. Much obliged for you producing the show for us. Dave, why don't you take us home?
Sure. Eric, yeah, once again, thank you. And Amy, it was a pleasure having you on. Really great topic. You know, could have gone into a lot more conversation with the spiritualism side, and maybe that'll be another show down the road. But you know, looking forward to getting back out there again. It's an absolutely beautiful place. And if you haven't been there, you really need to make an effort to get out there, people. It's an absolutely gorgeous place to go visit.
It is.
Perfect. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Till next Monday.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para X.